Hello, good afternoon.
I'm Simon Atkinson. I should start by saying that I'm here as an employee of Massey University, but tomorrow is my last day. So there was a communication glitch, and you'll see my new employer, but not for 2 weeks, as London School of Economics and Political Sciences. And I'm very pleased to be going there. I'm not just saying that because Steve's sitting in the audience. But I'm sort of here, if you like, aware that I'm on the cusp of something new, and that's quite exciting. I also, this morning during the keynote, was thinking about the story about the NASA, who I think spent $6 million, I gather, trying to work out how you could develop a pen that would write upside down, and the Russians decided they'd use a pencil. I'm sure you've all heard that story. I'm the boy with the pencil. You'll see why in a minute. I'm an educational developer, first and foremost. And I've been working with staff in some form of academic development role for about 17 years. A lot of it with educational technology, a lot of it wearing e-learning roles, a lot of it in relatively senior positions, but always focused on the experience of individual academic staff and their practice. And that's really what fascinates me. And what I started trying to do in a particular institutional context about a year ago was try and bring together some tools and resources for staff in my institution at Massey. That would bring together aspects of good practice or best practice from a range of different fields, and all of these have been mentioned already today. So first of all, John Biggs's notions of constructive alignment, the issue about effective learning outcomes, effective assessment design, effective teaching and learning activity design, all based around active verbs, the work that Diana's done, which obviously we're all familiar with, and also some of the work around the toolkits, which I'll come back to in a second. And the reason for wanting to explore toolkits, and you'll see I've tried to bring this together, is that this was mentioned this morning. The framework is fantastic, and most of us in educational technology and educational development love it and work with it and talk about it and critique it and enjoy having a go at it. But actually, when you sit down with an individual academic member of staff and try and have a conversation, it's not always terribly meaningful for them. It isn't as rich a visualization, I think, for often sitting down talking to a new physics lecturer as it is when you talk to another educational developer or an educational technologist. So whilst everything within it is something that I'm very happy working with, I've always found it quite difficult to work with as a tool. And so part of what I was trying to do was to find ways of making this a real and rich thing. And so I set about trying to do a number of things a year or so ago based on other work, which I'll cite later. Some of that was, as was talked about in the keynote this morning, was taking some of that pedagogical theory and trying to embody it in some way, trying to represent it so that it was meaningful and not too abstract for individual academic staff. Part was to take some guidance, sound pedagogical guidance, and being able to somehow embed that in some kind of tool, some kind of resource, and at this point I still didn't know what the hell I was doing, to capture some of those patterns, the whole learning design patterns that we've talked about, and I was partly basing that on work that I presented at Milton Keynes at this LAMS Learning Design Conference a couple of years ago around something called the Dial-E framework, which was digital artifacts for learning engagement work that we'd done funded by JISC. So I was trying to capture some of those experiences, but really making it meaningful for individual academic members of staff. And I came back round to the idea that really, and I was getting quite agitated this morning in my seat because no one was talking really about students and learning, and we keep coming back to the notion of teaching, and I do disagree with Diana when she says this. You can substitute methods of teaching with methods of learning. I think actually the language is very important, and I'm quite focused on trying to talk about learning as opposed to talking about teaching. And I think increasingly staff understand that, and staff actually see that their role is as much to facilitate learning as it is to see themselves necessarily as teaching. We still have colleagues, of course, who will tell us that they don't actually teach anyway. They profess, or they read for their degree, and don't understand why students can't read anymore. But essentially, the focus here is on learning. So that's it, really. That's all I wanted to say. That's the design. What I'd done, basically, was create something, literally, I'm on a timer here, aren't I? Was to create something, I think that was a bottle of Merlot or a Shiraz, I can't remember, which was trying to visualize the different modes of engagement that students undertook in any course of learning. So what would students do in order to learn? How do they engage? What context do they engage in? And this had nothing to do with teaching and nothing to do with technology. And what I ended up with was a pretty version, which basically says these are elements of experience. I'm sorry, it's going to keep jumping. I think it's not on time. It must be a keyboard. There's some issues around the different types of elements, engagements, if you like, that students are involved in. And I'm not going to go into the model hugely. I'm going to run through it very quickly. But the reason I wanted to show it to you is to say, that's the model. It's very interesting to talk to that, about that to educational developers, to other people who are interested in education and educational theory. But actually, what does that mean if I'm a physics lecturer? What does that mean if I'm actually a history lecturer? So I'm going to go through the model fairly quickly and then show you why. So these are the elements. There's learning materials and resource. We've talked today about OER. There's the traditional tutor contact time, whether it's lecture-based or other forms of face-to-face contact. There are different forms of facilitation, which could be face-to-face. There's increasingly an emphasis on peer learning, so learning that's actually moderated amongst peers. Then there's the social context, because we sometimes forget that our learners, whilst they're operating with their peers, are also operating with other people outside of their university experience. We know that a lot of students are working, some full-time, and so on. And indeed, they have family. I mean, this is partly influenced by my New Zealand experience. You can't actually be in New Zealand very long before someone asks you about your whakapapa or what your background familial history is, and so on. So that social context is actually very important. Then, of course, there's the personal context, by which we might just simply mean the fact that there are pre-existing learning experiences and expectations, whether it's sitting on a lawn and being on a punt, or whether it's actually an expectation that everything will be in lecture form, or I don't have to attend lectures. Whatever the expectation is, there's a personal context. Then there's the ever-popular reflection, the fact that we do want our students to undertake a process of metacognitive realization in one form or another. There are measurement systems, assessment, formative and summative, and then feedback, which of course is very well represented in Diana's model. So all I was doing by doing my little drawing and then producing a pretty picture was trying to find out how I made that relevant to the graduate profiles, the program intended learning outcomes, and the paper learning outcomes. So if you like, going back to Biggs's constructive alignment notion, I want to be able to sit down with an academic member of staff talking about their course design and saying, at the core are obviously the attributes and the outcomes that you expect the students to have. And these are the things that feed into that experience. It's not about you, it's about the student, and the student has all of these various things going on for them in their experience. But there is an interesting issue, because staff very often, of course, are designing in one direction, often actually starting with learning materials, and students very often start by looking at assessment. Students will often look at the assessment and say, what do I have to do? Who can I turn to help? Where do I go for support? And they come back round to the idea that ultimately they're going to engage with the academic in order to get there. So that egocentric issue, object-centric issue, was talked about this morning, is very important. So at the centre of the model, for want of a better word, is this idea that we want the student to own that responsibility. We want them to own the graduate profile, own the intended learning outcomes, and own the specific paper or course outcomes. And then we want them to engage, and we recognize that they're going to engage actually in a very wide variety of forms. Their engagement is not just about us. And we were talking earlier, Stephen and I, about the fact that you might want, as an academic, to say, well, I'm going to spend a week with my students in the first couple of weeks, and then actually I want to give them free rein for 6 weeks, now I'd like to have them back for 2 hours in the seventh week, and I'd like to... And, of course, you ring your time technician people, and they could tell you you have 2 hours on Tuesdays and 2 hours on Thursdays, and that's it, and you should be grateful, because everyone wants that room. And so our systems, in a sense, are working often against each other. Good pedagogy and institutional structures often don't work together well. What I wanted to do was to try and capture the different models. And when someone said to me, well, you know, that doesn't really suit me because I think of myself now as a sociocultural lecturer, I'm interested in that, I've read a book. Or indeed, if they're very up to date, they might well have been surfing and decided that connectivism is the thing. And what I'm saying is, well, actually, I'm not trying to invent new pedagogies here. What I'm trying to do is to provide a tool that I can talk to academic staff and talk to them about learning engagement, talk to them about the things that learners do, and that I believe I can capture that. So whilst I'm not being bold enough to say that flower diagram is capturing and taking over from the conversational framework, I don't think there's anything contradictory. I think what's there is captured within the model. But there is an issue about how you then take a theoretical model. I, by the way, am planning on doing 15 minutes plus 10. There is an issue about taking a model and saying, well, that's useful, I can sit with you and talk to you about it, but it does require me to be there, so it's a staff development activity, And the evidence already from having done this, run a number of workshops at NASI, is that works very well. But the reference to Grenier was work that Grenier and Martin Oliver and a number of other people have done in the past around toolkits and developing media toolkits and looking at the way in which staff actually make selections and look at their own practice and try to deconstruct their practice. And that actually a model, a conceptual theoretical model, is often very inaccessible to a routine, ordinary, daily member of staff, the important people at the chalk face. So what I wanted to do was to create something that was going to help them develop, was going to be descriptive, that was potentially going to be used as a diagnostic tool. I was being very ambitious. And that was also going to provide them with tools for evaluation. And I fantasized about somebody giving me 1.2 million, pounds, euros, dollars, anything really. And then I decided that wasn't going to happen. So I came up with my own personal high-tech solution. The reason being, actually, that I sat down, and it was mentioned in one of the presentations earlier, I sat down and decided that one of the biggest problems that I've encountered in all of the e-learning work that I've done is that in introducing, whether it's Sakai at Hull or developing Moodle at Massey, that as you introduce a new environment, you challenge people's academics expectations, you challenge their sense of themselves, you're asking them to think again about what they do. And whilst I'm very keen for people to deconstruct their practice and reconstruct their practice, which is, I think, what educational development is all about, you do need to make it as easy as possible. And so following the work that we've done with the GIST-funded project on Dial-E, which was actually deliberately low-tech, I wanted to follow a similar vein. So I actually went to Excel, and somebody mentioned this morning about spreadsheets as to design tools not actually being very creative or sexy, and I recognised that, but I wanted to do something with Excel because I wanted to be able to work with a toolkit. So you hopefully would recognise instantly from the visual that there is something there which sort of carries over from the model. So the elements of the model have come across into an Excel spreadsheet, and I just want to talk you through how this works. At the bottom, you will hopefully be able to see from the back there are individual sheets and pages. So the first sheet essentially introduces the model, describes a little bit about it, has some links off to some YouTube video, one of which talks about this and the conversational framework, and one of which talks about how you actually can change things. And there's a blog site where this and this presentation and the details are all available. And that actually makes it clear, there's a little explanation here on the tool workbook that you can actually delete individual sheets without damaging the integrity of the spreadsheet. There's then something about the way in which the SOL model works. So I'm sort of assuming that staff have gone and watched the little 10-minute video. But essentially, what we've then got is within each of those elements, we've described what those elements actually are, what we mean by feedback, what we mean by assessment, and asked a number of questions of students. So, for example, under learning materials, just to follow on from what was just said, you see here at the bottom it says learning materials. The materials are provided usually in advance to support domain knowledge acquisition. And under questions, what material already exists? So these are prompts for you to think about what it is. All of this was what Diana was talking about this morning, are the kind of things that you want people to be thinking about as they go into the process. But Excel actually has this kind of slightly neat function in that you can actually then embed as many comments and things as you want. So in addition, we've been able to then embed comments, and this is where I am at the moment, putting some of that pedagogical guidance straight into this as a toolkit, as a spreadsheet toolkit. So this one is about reading comprehension, because one of the standard questions that we get asked by staff when they start putting their learning materials together is, well, I don't see why they can't read 17 articles before breakfast, because I do. And I think academic staff often forget that academic staff, almost by definition, are very successful students. I said today about the dangers of reproducing practice, they are successful students. And so actually their expectations are of very successful students. And you're trying not to tell staff to dumb down, but you're trying to help them to understand the mechanisms, if you like, and to look at the experience holistically. And I'm trying to get them to look at this experience across a very wide range of elements, some of which is around learning materials and contact time, but also other aspects of your individual work. So we provide that. We then provide an overview, which actually, really already, good Lord.
To 20 minutes.
All right. Which provides an overview of the structure of the course. And actually it was interesting, I hadn't seen the LDSE tool this morning, but they put a pie chart in as well. It's a very useful illustration. So I picked up my nine elements, and again, this one is illustrative, but essentially what it's designed to do is to say, this is the balance and weighting of the kind of activity that you're asking students to do. And there's no imposition here. This is not forcing you into a particular model of practice. If you wanted to, you could actually still stand up and teach on your feet in front of the class for 3 hours and ask them to do 4 hours reading, and that would just simply be reflected in the model. So that's an overview, and the overview is simply built from each individual week. So the idea is that I would prepare this each week, and I would actually go through and describe what it was I wanted the students to do in terms of engagement. And in doing so, under each of those headings and categories and allocating time, because I'm interested here in student workload management, one of the things that I'm doing as a result of that is getting an image of the kind of experience that that student is going to have week by week. Now, the reason I'm doing that, there's a couple of reasons. We as an institution moved into so-called blended delivery at Massey. And of course, what happened was staff often took their existing face-to-face practice, did a lot of work producing fantastic learning resources, but didn't necessarily account for the facilitation that was required in addition, and so found themselves doing an awful lot of additional facilitation. But in some cases, then still walked into the classroom and taught the material that they just produced beautifully for all the distant students to access. They didn't use that material for the students face-to-face. They still used their classroom time for delivery. So the issue about staff workload in this increasingly blended environment, I think, is interesting too. And that was one of the reasons why there was a heavy emphasis here on time. There's also, in this particular version 1.2, is that there's a blue column there which actually allows the student, if they're given this as an Excel spreadsheet, to record the amount of time they actually spend. So they're actually thinking through the amount of engagement that they're making with each of these various categories as well. So, for example, and somebody said to me at a presentation I did at DEANS back in April, the Distance Education Association in New Zealand had a conference, and this was at a very early stage there. And I actually had a version of this, and they kind of said to me, well, there's no detail there, there's no information there. So, well, no, there isn't really, because, of course, I've got a virtual learning environment, and the students are going to work through the virtual learning environment to download what I'm wanting. What I'm doing is, in a sense, giving them a structure. This is, if you like, an advanced organizer. That was its intention, was to actually give this to the student as an advanced organizer and say, you own this learning. You'll see me for 2 weeks, for two hours this week. You might not see me at all this week. But this is the learning that I've mapped for you. You can deviate from it because every individual is going to be different. You can record those differences if you want. But essentially, I recognize that your experience is going to be unique to you. But this is my outline for how I'm engaging. So in this example, this is actually from a paper that I've been teaching this semester. This was an issue where students actually were being asked to create a personal inventory of the technology that they used. And then it actually asks them in the social context to actually go and share that with someone from a different generation. It could be a grandchild or a niece, or it could actually be a grandparent. It didn't matter, they just have to be from a different generation. So you're asking the student to engage in a different activity form, whether it's in their personal context or their social context. You're asking them to, under reflection, they're being asked to develop a thought bubble or flower chart, and they actually go and do that, and the instructions on how to do that within the virtual learning environment. So this isn't the container for the entire learning experience. This isn't generating the learning activity. What this is doing is, if you like, is providing you with a visualization, a map of the learning design. And the intention was that it would be developmental. You would sit down and work in a program team or a project group and develop your paper. It's descriptive or illustrative, because the idea is that I will either print this out as a PDF and give it to students as an advanced organizer, or I might actually give it to them in spreadsheet form. It's diagnostic, because it allows me to look back and actually say, well, actually, the balance of my paper, much as LDSE was clearly trying to do, to look and say, well, actually, that's really interesting. I've got much more feedback than I thought I really had. Is that realistic in terms of the amount of commitment I can put into that as an academic? Or actually, I'm asking them to really read way too much. And it's evaluative, because one would hope that the students, in some cases, the students will actually complete feedback based on that. They're actually able to annotate that and hand it back to you, even potentially write in the activities that they did under certain categories and headings. The intention was to produce something accessible. It's in Excel. I have played up loading it into Google spreadsheets, and it works fine. I was just saying to James, it was done on the new version on a Mac, and it went to the old version. So, you know, it has kind of carried across. I've looked at it in various forms, but it is fairly basic and standard. It's not using too many bells and whistles, even within the Excel context. I'm already seeing its transformative potential, which is kind of where I started in terms of academic practice. We've run some projects, and it's been really interesting working with program teams and paper teams. completely customizable. There's a version 1.1 is already up on the blog, and it's been downloaded by a number of people, and I've had a few emails people asking if they can delete the sheets. From my point of view, you can do whatever the hell you like with it. Just let me know. And in terms of development time, it's just Excel. So the amount of time that, that people want to develop it themselves, they're welcome to do so. We ran some pilots in May and June with individuals talking it through with some program teams. There are now three projects that are more structured in terms of having research and ethics permission over the next year. The intention is to try and develop something that integrates course design and staff development and maybe use the tool as an exploratory and explanatory tool, because talking about the model in itself is quite interesting. As I said earlier, you know, you can talk about instructivism or you can talk about social cultural learning and actually talk about it in terms of a model so that students build up a picture of learning theory in something that they can then actually implement in a very practical way later on when they start practicing. Student actual time is being recorded. And the area where the work is really interesting, and I have looked already at how we might integrate things like CloudWorks and the Australian compendium project and things, is taking that, you know, the embedded pedagogical guidance can be in any way, shape or form, including institutional units. Educational development units might come along and say, well, actually, we'd like to customize that to actually provide a particular type of guidance because we're this type of institution, or our language differs from the general language that may be used. So after today, I'm actually on that email address up until the 2nd of August. So if anyone wants to follow up, they're more than welcome to do so. Otherwise, wait until the 2nd of August. Is that right, Teaching and Learning Centre? I realised I wrote that last night.
Yes, it
is. Oh, good. Nice to know who you're working for, isn't it? It is the London School of Economics, and I'm there somewhere on email from the 2nd of August. That's it.
Some time for questions.
Please. Yes.
Just say, I didn't say that spreadsheets aren't sexy. Clearly, they clearly can be. I think what I would say is that textual and spreadsheet type designs are less creative in themselves, but spreadsheets and textual designs are very good at structuring a stage-by-stage process. And that's really important when we're starting to engage with people who don't necessarily understand the concepts in the way that we've presented them. The structure is really important.
Well, I mean, Chris, I think, made the point earlier in one of the question sessions about, you know, what do we mean by learning design? And, I mean, it came up a couple of years ago at the conference in Milton Keynes as well. The project that I did with Kevin Burden from Hull around the DALL-E framework, digital artifacts stuff, we were interested in designing models of engagement that would go from one discipline to another. And they worked. It worked pretty well. It was a good resource. We spoke to GIST content managers about it. They liked it. Some of the new digitization projects, they seemed quite interested, et cetera, et cetera. But the issue was, what do we mean by learning design? Do we mean designing a particular learning activity that happens within a given time frame, or do we mean designing curriculum, or do we mean designing courses, or do we mean to... So often I think we use these terms quite liberally, and I'm aware that to some extent, I mean, I've had people say to me, well, that's not really learning design, that's curriculum planning. And I had this argument with Grunier about the Compendium LD project, which to me didn't look like a learning design tool at all. I thought it was a kind of curriculum mapping tool, because that's, in my language, that's what it looked like, you know, 2 years ago. So, yeah, I think the spreadsheet, in a way, was designed to produce, originally was, in a sense, designed to produce an advanced organizer for students, because I wanted students to take, to understand that they owned the learning experience, only part of which was going to be the lecturer standing in front of them, that there was a much bigger engagement. You know, it wasn't the 4 hours of lecture that you got. It was actually that you were expected to do 16 hours this week on that particular paper, you know, in my institutional context. So what does that look like? How do I plan that? How do I map that out? And the early evidence from the conversations with students on one of the human development papers at Massey has been that they kind of suddenly realize how much thought the academic has given to the broad learning experience. You know, it's like, oh, that's, okay, so you have actually thought about how long it's going to take me to read that, and you've asked me to do some activity, and you've clearly thought about how those activities relate to other activities, and so on. So it's been quite interesting. Some staff have looked at the spreadsheet and said, well, I would do all the learning design, I do all the learning material stuff first. So in a sense, they're doing what they used to do, which was decide what the reading list was before they started, and they design it like that. And other people are saying, well, actually, let's see how heavily I can actually lean on the personal and social context of the student. So we, in education, for example, it's the proportion of people who choose to do a teacher education degree who have a close relative or close friend who is either a teacher or has already done teaching is very, very high. And so because you know that, you can't necessarily rely on it, but because you know that that's true, you can almost look at that social context, personal context dimension to the model and say, well, in that case, what kind of activities, what kind of engagement? Let's get the students to go out and interview an existing or former teacher, because 90% of them can do that at home. So, you start to then look at the student experience in a slightly more holistic way. There's a paper which will be submitted very shortly about this, but the other aspect, for those of you who have any kind of New Zealand awareness, is that in the bicultural context in New Zealand between the European and Māori, is that Māori colleagues found this really interesting, but the first thing they did was they turned the model so that they actually had social context at the top. Because in some senses, they were visualizing the importance of that and almost prioritizing the importance of that. But they liked the fact that it was a very holistic. You have a concept of ako, which is, you know, teaching and learning is the same thing. They're indivisible. You know, you learn and you teach. And so I think the intention was to produce something very practical, very accessible, and very holistic. And so far, at least, the early evidence is that people are finding it useful to use. Certainly not high tech, and certainly not runtime. There's nothing going to come out of this that's runtime, but certainly from an academic development point of view, it's already, I think, proving quite interesting.
Yeah. Or is that something that you're hoping that will engender that kind of dialogue between students?
Yeah, it's perfectly possible, because there is nothing to stop me giving this spreadsheet to the student with a partial map for the program. I mean, there's nothing to say that I don't actually say to the student, this is what I think week six looks like, but actually there are whole areas of this which you now have to map out for yourself. There might be one core element that I want you to do. I mean, you can imagine a situation where you take some OER and say, well, basically this week there'll be a one-hour tutorial. There's a resource which I'm expecting you to engage with for an hour. But I want you to tell me what you want in terms of feedback, what you think formative assessment would look like in this context. You could have groups work with it and produce their own learning. So it's a vessel. It's not locked down at all. It's just Excel. So anything you can do with Excel, you can do with this. One of the lecturers who I can't name did actually ask whether in fact it would be practical to have all of the spreadsheets sent back, and could you compile them all, and, so they were already thinking along those lines. It's like, how do I get the learners to actually tell me what's expected of them in week 9 or week 10 or week 11,
or even just like their own expectations of, I think that it will take me 4 hours to do this, whereas as you as the teacher, you probably know that it's going to take them 18 hours.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, the blue column there is actually actual time, because one of the things that was asked for after the first version was discussed with colleagues was the notion that actually you wanted learners to be able to tell you what it did actually take them. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the partly for diagnostic purposes. Again, it's the developmental, diagnostic, descriptive, and evaluative thing that I was trying to achieve, because the intention here is that you would get someone to come back to you and say, well, already after the second week, I can tell you that your expectations of our reading are way, way out of bat. And then as an academic, I can look and go, okay, well, in that case, maybe I need to be a bit more selective about what I'm asking students to do and shift the influence. And if you had a cohort where suddenly you're teaching a group of engineers and it turns out that actually two of them are actually directly related to the boss of some major building firm whose parents are very helpful, and suddenly the whole class has this amazing opportunity to engage, you would want to be able to redesign your program. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the biggest criticisms you get when you start talking about these kinds of any systematized learning design model, and I'm sure you've all heard it, I certainly have, is you start talking to academic staff about that, and very quickly they'll say, you know, good teaching is responsive, and I need to be able to change on the fly and respond to... So any notion that you lock them down often terrifies them. They want that flexibility. And this, in a sense, is a structure that's intended to get the academic to think more holistically about the learner experience and actually take some pressure off themselves. Because quite often academic staff do just conveniently forget almost that actually the students have 10 hours of, or whatever of time, which has nothing to do with them, but is allocated to this paper. And you could think quite usefully about how you do that. And it doesn't have to be, oh, well, in that case, I'll ask them to do some more reading, which tends to be the default quite often still.
Conscious that we're actually up to time for coffee. You know,
but that's a good sign, James. Two questions.
Please grab Simon for, you know, more questions after coffee.
Well, not too much, because it's quite hot up here, but yeah.
Once again.
Not literally. Thank you very much.
And coffee's just around and back at the same place as this morning.
It is actually, it is very hot.
Yeah, no, it's happening to start again, but they're sort of weird.
You're next.
Maybe. Yeah. Is there internet connection?
I think so. I'm just trying to get my USB out without going like that.
It's a new English teacher from New Zealand. It was in class, I was observing him.
Oh.
And he said to the learners of English, one woman, two women. I said, I got him off to the lesson, how the hell is this one woman, two women? And he said, in New Zealand...
Is it
not? I don't know. He said in New Zealand, that's we say women.
So
and I said, no, you can't say that in front of the students.
Not
woman.
No.
And he said, that's my right. I'm from New Zealand, and that's how we say it there. Is that true?
No. Well, certainly not in, for parking. I mean, it may be.
Sorry.
Yeah. Isn't it
now? All automatic.